everybody. It's Alex here, and welcome to the Coach's Journey podcast. In this episode, I'm interviewing the inspirational Jo Wright. Jo admits she had to get her dad's permission before deciding on No More Shit Managers, Seven Steps to a Coaching Culture as the title of her book. Thankfully, he agreed, and the book has made Jo a best-selling Amazon UK author as her message about the power of a coaching culture spreads to people and organisations around the world. In this episode of the Coach's Journey podcast, Jo tells me about the foundational experiences in early life that instilled her with a belief in the positive change that can happen when people have better conversations. She describes the life-changing conversations that have shaped her career, from managing a small team and noticing her flair for mentoring, to co-founding a coaching business and magazine that helped propel the industry forward by creating digital coaching solutions. Jo's book is a love letter to humanity, and what shines through in this episode is her desire to help as many people as possible by making sure that coaching and the life-changing experiences it offers is for everybody. Having embedded coaching cultures in some of the world's biggest organizations, she is succeeding in her aim quite spectacularly. In this episode, we also talk about the human development that takes place when training as a coach, how far we can go when we're willing to be vulnerable, the fundamental importance of maintaining hope that things can be better, and the value we invest in ourselves and how our clients experience our personal growth and self-development. Jo also shares some invaluable advice about getting your work out into the world, generously opening up about the steps she took to reach her audience. Oh, and if you've got this far and you are still wondering where Robbie has got to, I'm one of the new co-hosts on this podcast, and I'm very excited to share my first interview with the world. If you would like to meet the whole team, please listen back to episode 56 and all will be revealed. My individual introductory episode, where Robbie interviews me, is immediately before this one, episode 62. When I joined the hosting team, I knew that Jo was someone I was massively keen to get on the show. By the end of this conversation, I am convinced you will understand why that was. And now, let's introduce you to the brilliant Jo Wright. Jo Wright, welcome to the Coach's Journey podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Alex. I'm delighted to be here.
I was really keen to introduce you and your story to our listeners. It was explained that I could be one of the new hosts of the podcast, you were somebody who I really wanted to get on for all sorts of reasons, which we'll get into. But I think one of them for me is just I find that you have a real sense of inspiring positivity and energy about you that is infectious. And I also think there's something about your business, the way you've built your business, which is both inspirational and interesting to other people. And I think that there's something in your story which certainly I found really interesting, and I think our listeners will as well. So very excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, Alex. I'm looking forward to seeing where the conversation takes us.
Superb. So the first question I really want to ask you, so one question that everybody who comes on the show gets asked, which is, where did you first come across coaching?
It's really interesting. I was many years ago, over 25 maybe, that I was managing a small team, and I'd been recently promoted, and the team were way more experienced than me, way more everything, to be honest, way more everything. And I remember I'd not really had any level of leadership or management development, and I had that absolute fear of I needed to know it all, but I didn't know it all. And I'll never forget the moment that, and I can see it now, one of my team were working on a problem, and I felt that I had to tell him all the things that I knew, because I was the manager after all, so that's what we did, right? And I was like, here's everything that I know. And then I kind of emptied my pockets of everything. It was like, look, I've got nothing left, to be honest. I've got nothing left to give to this problem. And then I just sort of took a breath and I just went, what do you think? And then that was it. It was like, why did I not ask that question before? Why did I have to think that I had to know it all? Why did I not ask my team member? And the best solution came out of his mouth. And together we then created something fabulous together. And I'll never forget that moment as long as I live. It was one of those critical career light bulb moments where I thought, why did I not ask that question beforehand? Why did I feel the need to know it all? And I'll never forget it. And ever since then, I've asked, you know, powerful questions, and I've seen the magic that it has happened within my team and how well they've developed. And I never knew that was coaching. I didn't know it had a name. I didn't know it had a badge. I just felt it was actually being a decent leader and line manager to get the most out of my team. And I've never gone back since. And it was only till late, much, much later on in my career that I realized it did have a name. And then I realized that, oh, there's even more. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the conversation. There's even more experiences where how it came to kind of the fore much more prominently. But that was the first time that I just went, wow, why did I not ask that question sooner? It was fascinating. Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful story. And also, having read your book, which is just out and we'll get onto it in a little bit, that really, I can really see that interwoven in your approach in the book, and kind of the power of the simplicity in a way of, you know, helping people to think for themselves and empowering people, that I think for me shines throughout your work. And so when you say that you didn't know at that point that that had the name of coaching, can you remember the moment when you kind of did make that realization? Did you have a coach yourself, for example? What made you realize that this is coaching and it's a distinct thing?
Yeah, I started becoming the go-to person in the organization for mentoring, actually. Mm. And I researched what that actually was, what that meant. You know, and I wasn't in a senior leadership role, I was middle management, but people were coming to me. I was becoming that go-to mentor. So I understood what mentoring meant, which obviously meant a lot of coaching skills. So, and I could tell I was really starting to help people in their careers without, again, overthinking it, without being any expert. It was, you know, there was a level of just being a decent, good human being who cared about other people's growth and development was absolutely the core of what, and I was getting so much from it, seeing people grow. And then eventually I went on my own leadership development course and was given a coach. Now I enjoyed that experience, but actually I think it was great. But I think it was the sort of coaching potentially that could give coaching a bad name. I'm very, very much a doer, very action orientated. I want to get things done. I want to progress and, you know, go forward. And that was just, it was more the sort of Nancy Klein-esque coaching. And I didn't love that. I wanted somebody to challenge me and support me, and nonetheless, it was still a fabulous space for me thinking through my own requirements and what was next for me. And it became clear that it was through, and you'll see this, or I think it's in the book, about me being on a change program. And I actually realized I wanted to do a coaching qualification. I wanted the badge. I wanted to learn deeper. And it was and not because of the coaching qualification itself, but I needed to understand about human behavior more. And it was my change program where I recognized that something I couldn't see things. I couldn't, all my roles have been an input and output. This was a role about feeling. I could feel something. I could sense something. And I could feel it and sense it in human behaviors that people don't just change when you tell them to. Yeah, I was on a change program where we were busy telling people what the changes were, but we weren't working with them or winning hearts and minds to enable the changes to happen. And it was then that I went, whoa, this is deeper. This is psychology here. There's something special is happening right in front of my eyes. And I knew I needed to explore that further. And it was through me coaching people, individuals and groups on the change program that I could see us moving through the change, what I would call the winning hearts and minds stage, which is in the book, that I could see people wanting to adopt the change. They were, and it was just purely through spending time with them, asking questions, their thoughts, opinions, engaging with them. And as opposed to, this is the change, here we go, crack on. You know, there was a whole bit in the middle that was missing. And that was the role that I played to fill that. And I loved it. And it was a really critical career moment for me, that role. And I struggled with it at first because it didn't have an input and an output. It wasn't do this and you get that. I really struggled with it. I could sense it, but I couldn't, I can't describe it. It was a feeling more than anything. And once I harnessed what that feeling was, I knew that I wanted to explore coaching on a more professional level. Because I also felt that I had something special myself to be able to offer other people that made me totally fulfilled and totally happy and purposeful. So I knew I had to go and get my coaching qualification, which is what I did, you know, and that was a significant investment. And I often hear people talking about investment in learning and development. I've even had it this weekend where people go, oh, well, that would be a, you know, and they compare it to a really nice holiday. And I'm like, but that will enable more nice holidays by investing in personal development and growth unlocks another level of self. So I don't buy into it's either or. For me, it's and. It's just which way you do it and which you prioritize. And for me, coaching has enabled so much and will continue to do so in ways that I don't even know yet.
That's really helpful. And we're both alumni of the Barefoot program.
Yeah,
aren't we? So, you know, one of the things that I found through my training, and definitely I think this is probably something that you would have found and that you experienced, is that you just, if you get good coach training, and I thought Barefoot was wonderful and there's other good providers out there, but I felt that I just did so much work on myself. So when you were talking about that thing about, you know, that comparison to a holiday, the thing about when you're learning to coach, and you're doing it with a good organization, with good people. The people in my cohort were so good. They were so impressive, but also their hearts were in the right place. We were all people who wanted to learn about ourselves, and you received coaching through the training as well, more coaching than I probably ever previously had.
Yeah.
And for me, it's very hard, just as in the same way that coaches often talk about, you know, how it's hard to quantify the difference that coaching makes. And it's hard to explain to someone who's never had coaching, perhaps, about exactly what that magic is like. But I find that through learning about coaching, through having that depth of training, for me, it's really developed me as a human being. And I've learned things about myself. Does that resonate with you? How did you find that?
I found it life-changing. Life-changing. And I can't, those are the words I use. When I learned how to coach, and I was coached through my coaching qualification experience, it was life-changing. It fundamentally changed me as a human being. So all the experiences I had up until that point led me to actually then getting the coaching qualification. But that then gave me the platform to go to another level again. And I feel like I'm about to start building my next platform for the next level again. It was life-changing. I had no idea about things like limiting beliefs, and I didn't realize, but, you know, I'd been carrying a giant rucksack on my back full of boulder size limiting beliefs. Obviously it was an invisible rucksack, but nonetheless it was. And they were there, and I carried them around every day, weighing me down. And then the coaching qualification made me just go, woof, and I just threw them off and they've gone. And now I don't have limiting beliefs. I am actually now really, I have so much awareness of what's possible. Now it's trying to distill it down. And even this morning, you know, I'm thinking, okay, what is it? What's next? How do I make this happen? How big do I want to dream? And suddenly my dreams have kind of started exploding. And yeah, so that was a really, you know, there was a reason that I invested in the qualification. There's a reason that I embraced it to its fullest. You know, I'll be forever grateful to that experience, forever grateful. And I tell Kim Morgan as often as I can, whenever I have any level of contact with her, you know, I'm like, thank you for changing my life. She was like, well, we just, you know, as she always does, we just enabled that process. And it's like, well, you did. That's true. And it's for me to make the change happen. But yeah, I feel that it's given me superpowers that I didn't realize I had.
It's lovely you mentioned Kim Morgan, because Kim Morgan's been interviewed on this podcast, and it's one of the things that makes me sort of slightly pinch myself about being a host on this podcast now, is that I only heard of Barefoot because Kim Morgan was on the podcast. And so I heard of Kim Morgan on the podcast, absolutely loved her interview, one of my favorite interviews ever on this podcast. Just her warmth and her resonance for me really shone through. And then I investigated Barefoot and ended up, you know, training with Barefoot.
I'll never forget the moment I chose Barefoot and how I found Barefoot. I researched for a long time. Research / procrastinate, you decide. Because it's a big investment, and it's like, okay, so it has to be right. You know, if you're spending money on a car or a really nice holiday, you spend your time researching. But I researched to the nth degree. And I was veering towards Henley Business School because I thought, oh, that sounds very highly credible, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, there was something that was tugging at my heart that it wasn't quite meeting for me. And Barefoot filled that. For me, it was highly practical and also academic. And that ticked everything for me. And I absolutely loved it. Every single second. I'm still in contact. I've made some good friends through Barefoot that I'm still in contact with. Because you find your tribe, don't you? You find your tribe, you learn together, you go through experiences that you wouldn't go through with anybody else. So yeah, Barefoot, Kim, everybody there, very special.
Very much so. And I think it's a really useful thing for listeners who haven't done coach training to think about, as well as we both really recommend that people do get trained as a coach and that they really invest not just money, but invest their time and their thought and their whole self in that training. But also that, you know, with the different training providers out there, it's about finding one which resonates with you. I went on Taster Days and I think I can remember the moment for me, and this just shows how these things can be very personal. One of the key things that stood out for me about why I chose Barefoot was I went on the introductory training, and there was a concept was introduced. I think it was something around Nancy Klein, Time to Think.
Yeah.
And somebody said, oh, what's that about? And the Barefoot trainer on this free introductory training said, oh, does anyone else know about this? And I thought, well, I know a rudimentary amount, but I put my hand up and my virtual hand up. And she allowed me to explain it to the group.
Lovely.
And I was like, wow, this is a marketing vehicle for you.
Yeah.
And you don't know me from Adam, and you don't know what I'm going to say. And you have the kind of humility and ability and interest in empowering others to be like, let me hand over the floor to this person I don't know.
Wow.
And I felt so empowered in that moment.
Lovely. I love that.
So you've got, you did your training. How did you start getting clients? Were you doing some coaching for free? Like, how did it start off becoming a more important part of your life and your profession? What was the next part of that journey?
I think I subscribed to the Life Coach Directory and paid like £15 a month to get my name on there. And I got a magazine, a digital one, which I struggle with digital magazines. I like touching things and reading and curling up on the sofa. And a few people started coming to me. So that was for paid work. And I remember feeling really anxious, really nervous. I can remember a bit of pro bono stuff as part of your coach training. I remember that with friends and the feedback they gave me and the learnings I had. But then I started getting some paid work and really starting to enjoy it. But it wasn't really paying a lot at all. And I knew I needed to, I was newly self-employed, my coaching qualification enabled that. And I knew I needed to, you know, earn more. So I put my coaching skills together or to great use by doing some consultancy work. But coaching was part of within the program of consultancy. And that really helped me then get to another level of an income, but also space to think what's next. And it was at this point that I met my now business partner for where we ended up developing Coaching Culture. And I know the story's in the book.
I love it. Please tell it.
Really? So
yeah, no, I really love it. I mean, you told me this, we'd spoken online before, you told me about the story even before I read it in the book, so I knew it. But I really liked it, how you came to meet, you know, first.
It was, so I was newly self-employed, and I thought, oh, apparently you're supposed to go to networking groups. Not the sort of thing I particularly, I mean, I love meeting people and I love speaking to people, but the whole idea of a networking group's like, oh, how can I make this easy? But off I went. I went to one. And it was in a random pub one like Wednesday evening or something on an evening. And there was a whole massive group of people and they were all wanting to do coaching. And I remember sitting in the room thinking, oh, this isn't for me. This isn't for me. But these two people came up to me. They were sort of drawn to me and got chatting. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing. This is what's going on in my life. And they went, you need to come on this course. I was like, what course? You need to learn how to digitalize coaching or whatever you want to do. And I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. They went, but the course has already started. There's only two courses and the second thing's coming up in the next month or two. I was like, I want to come on it. They were like, well, we'll speak to the course leader, but I'm not sure you're going to get on it, but we'll try. So then I had a call with this person and I convinced him that I needed to come on this course. He's like, look, you've already missed the first course. This is ridiculous. You've already missed the first one. I was like, I know, but I've done this, and this in my career. Come on, let me on. And he was like, oh, all right then. So off I went. So the course was literally going to happen I can't remember, 6 weeks later. And I turned up and there's all these fancy cars outside the course. And there's me tootling up in my little car. And I was like, oh, imposter syndrome was just like going crazy. But I thought, oh, I like these cars. And I toddled my way into the course. And I was just in a room with 19 entrepreneurial people. They all had their own business. And I'd recently been made redundant, but was setting myself up on my own. And I was just like, I am not worthy. Why am I even in this room with all these super clever people? And I met some fabulous people. And I stayed in contact with the course tutor by because everyone was part of a Facebook group. And it was like, you know, I'm going to stay in contact. Don't really, you know how, where this will go. And literally I did this course with this guy, this tutor. And on that day, when everybody was doing that, you know, those introductions again, the slow creeping death of introductions, It came to my point. I was like, oh, everybody else was like, oh, hello, I'm so-and-so and I'm a, you know, highly successful business owner, but I just want to know how to go digital. And everybody was like, oh, all these successful business owners. And I just sat there, was like, hello. You know, I was like, hello, my name's Joan. I've recently been made redundant, you know, and I got the loudest cheer in the room. And I remember thinking, has somebody just walked in? Have I missed something? And they were like going, woo. And then I was like, what? Everybody up until that point in my life had kind of made me feel like the end of the world had arrived, that, you know, it was all doom and gloom and, you know, this is it. Your life is now officially over. And I remember thinking, wow, that cheer was for me. Why? What? And I knew in that moment that I wanted to actually hang out with super positive people who had a growth mindset, who could make anything happen. And then I didn't realize, but the course tutor sent me a message a year ago through Facebook Messenger one night and just sort of said, you live in this village, don't you? I was like, yes, I do. And he said, yeah, I've seen you checking in the local wine bar. I was like, on Facebook, I was like, oh, really? Is that what I'm going to be known for? And he said, yeah, I've just moved. I was like, oh, where have you moved? And then I went, I just remembered. I saw a fancy car on the same street as me. And I said, where do you live? And he said, yeah, this is where I live. I was like, yeah, you've just moved next door but one to me. And the rest is history. He started dumping all these books on me. We got chatting about building businesses and learning. He was already a very successful business owner. And out of the blue, and I don't believe really things happen out of the blue, he sold his business about 4 or 5 months later. That was in the January, February time. He got approached to sell his business in the April, May, sold it in the June, and within a month he'd set up a business with me, because I'd been talking about coaching and how it was the silver bullet, how it was the answer to everything. And I was so passionate. I was a real soapbox moment, and I could see his entrepreneur brain going shh. And he was like, well, could we digitalize coaching? I was just about to say, absolutely not. No, it's a human to human interaction. How very dare you? And I suddenly thought, if we want to get this out to the world, if we need to change everybody's lives here by experiencing coaching, well, then the only way to do it is through technology. So I said, yeah. And the rest is history.
That's just such a wonderful story. And I like what you said, you know, about not believing in coincidence in that just sound yeah. Like it came together at the right time. And I think one of the things that really comes across in that story for me is your willingness to be vulnerable.
Oh.
Like, you know, your willingness to sort of say, I'm starting again. I don't know this. I might be the last person on a course. The other people in this room aren't like me or don't seem like me at first, but I'm willing to put myself out there. And I think it, for me, it really comes across for you because, you know, up until this point, you'd had a successful career. Mm-hmm. So it was up until this point, you could say for some people in their lives, if they're having success, they'd be like, well, why would I put myself through something difficult, you know, potentially difficult, make me look a bit silly. But what is it, you know, I'd like to, Before we continue this journey and talk a bit more about coaching culture, your business, I'd like to ask you a bit about what it is in you. You think that is that means you have this attitude. Like, have you always had it, or what sort of changed and developed for you over time?
Wow. So obviously, being a coach, being somebody who reflects and tries to look back and connect the dots, I can see, and you've read it in the first page of my book, I think I lost my mum when I was 17 and my mum was 44. And my life changed at the age of 44. My mum's life ended at 44. Mine's fundamentally changed at 44. And I, you know, that to me is no coincidence. Up until that time, I'd not believed I was going to live beyond that time subconsciously. That was my belief. And I would say to people, I would even say things like, if I lived that long. At 44, I literally met my now business partner, 3 weeks after my 44th birthday, my life changed forever. I think the loss of my mum at such a young age has made me view life very differently than many people who maybe don't experience something quite traumatic. I've even read a post from a former colleague this weekend, I think on LinkedIn, about her experiences of people who've experienced some level of grief at quite a young age view life differently. And I think I'm one of those people. And I think it gives me an absolute inner drive, determination, want to help others to live their life bigger, better, brighter. And then by default, I will too. And my mum she died only ever wanting to go on a cruise around the Mediterranean. And she never did it. She never got on her cruise. So it's made me realize life is all about experiences and making them happen. But fundamentally, you know, you and I know the words that my mum taught me, which was there's no such word as can't, which is the fundamental principle behind the book. But she also taught me, you know, she used to always say to me when I was growing up, I don't care what you go on and do in your life, as long as you are happy. And it, no matter what that is, as long as you are happy, I don't think you'll always be happy if it's just doing X, Y, Z, but you've got to be happy. And I know now that there's no such word as can't, although as we know from the front of the book, there is indeed such a word as can't, because I looked in the dictionary one day and found it. But by then, it was totally ingrained in my heart that there's no such word as can't, and I live my life. But it took me to get to the age of 44 to start doing that, because I'd not believed I was going to live beyond that. So I'd lived my life just do what I needed to do. And actually, since 44, everything's changed. The technicolor has arrived in my life.
Thank you for that. I mean, I got, you know, I knew some part of that story, and I still got a bit of a tingle as you were telling it. And, you know, especially around the 44, this was the time when all these things started for you, but you've been worried about, you know, that particular date in your own life. And only if you're happy to, could you tell us a bit more about your mum, what she was like as a person and how she inspired you?
Really interesting. She was, I don't know whether I've got some level of similar tendencies, but my mum was very popular with other people. And she was also very giving, and very giving. She was always an auxiliary nurse, and then she went into care assistant, and I used to go and hang out with her after school on a Friday just so I could get a lift home. And also they did the best shortbread biscuits at the care home as well for the old people. So I used to go and sit with the old people and talk to them while my mum was busy doing her work. And she was always very giving and very kind and caring and fun. We didn't have much money, but I seemed to hang out with a lot of people who did. And I went to a great school, and all the parents had really great careers, whereas my mum and dad didn't. But all the friends used to come to my house. My mum was the gravitational pull to all my friends. You know, my friends would stay over, and I had the smallest box bedroom, and my dad had to build me this sort of bunk bed so I could fit more people under it to stay over. And everybody like stay up late talking to my mum, and I'd be like, I'm going to bed, I'm tired, you know, but they'd be stay hanging out talking to my mum. And I think she's hugely inspired me as a human being to be a good hearted person, to think about other people. And, you know, she always wanted to set up. Her mum was a cafe owner, so her mum was quite entrepreneurial. And my mum always lived her life wanting to go on this Mediterranean cruise that she never got on. And she always, every week, she'd be looking through the local newspaper at opportunities to set up her own sandwich shop, but she never got there. And it's interesting now because myself and my brother are both running our own businesses. And I even said it to my dad recently. I was like, I wonder whether we're subconsciously living out mum's life that she wanted, that she didn't ever get to. And he went, who knows, who knows? So yeah, interesting. It is a real driver, and I know it's a subconscious driver, I think, for me and my brother, that, you know, maybe we're just either living that for our mum, or we're still believing that she's looking down somewhere and feeling that level of pride and support and all the good stuff. So a massive, massive life trauma that actually at the time that actually does influence. I definitely know 44 was something that I didn't live my life until 44. And then suddenly when I realized I was still alive and I'm hurtling towards my 52nd birthday and I'm still here and I still believe, firmly believe, I'm about to start writing the best chapter of my life.
Well, thanks for describing that. There's so many, you know, powerful lessons and things to think about in there. And one thing that I'm always very curious about is kind of the reasons that the why behind why people do things in their life, you know, why they follow a particular path. I'm always so interested in the stories behind that. And I think also in through that why, you start to understand the view that people maybe have about other human beings. Because I would say your book, which I feel like I'm doing a teaser trailer for, because I keep saying we're going to get onto it, but we're definitely going to build up to it. I feel that there's a part of your book, there's an aspect of your book, which is a bit of a sort of a love letter to humanity, I'd call it.
Oh, wow. Oh, my word. Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, I think so, because I think that one of the things that really comes across strongly in the book is your belief in that people want to feel empowered and want to feel involved in things. And also that, and it's something, you know, we definitely learn in our training about that unconditional positive regard that we'd have for our coaching clients and for other people. And when you're just describing your mum, how she was and the job she did, and also your view of things, it feels to me that there must be some fundamental things that you believe about human beings that really you've carried into your work. Like, that does that feel right? Like, what sort of fundamental belief do you think you have about human beings?
That we can, I say it when I do talks to people, organizations, we can all be more, not do more. This do more is not acceptable in any stretch of the imagination. You know, that leads to stress, it leads to burnout, it leads to illnesses. It's not right. But we can all be more, being human beings. And I always remember one of my former HR directors said, we're human beings, not human doings. And I thought, oh, I like that. But actually, as I've embarked on my own personal career to be more, I now know what that means. And I've not finished being at all. And actually, we can all be more, but we have to make that time and effort and invest in our own learning and personal growth to be more. Because I think if we be more, we can do less.
Yeah. If we be more, we can do less. And I think in the modern world, there's so much about there's so much with our work because of smartphones, people can be always on call and people can, you know, think they're missing out on things. And there's that kind of busy aspect to it. And I think that there's something that I think coaching really allows people is just to have that space. I certainly found in my own work through doing some consulting, but a lot of what is really powerful for people is just them having a space in their day, week, month, or year to be able to think about what's important to them, to come up with the things that are important, and then what action plan might take that forward. But a lot of people don't feel they have that space. They just don't feel that they have that mental space to be able to do that.
It's really interesting. I'm coaching somebody at the minute and we were together on Friday and that person said to me, you know, I started asking some questions and started to think bigger for her life. And She says, I never, ever think like this. I am so busy doing my job and doing stuff. And I just think if we can, you know, if we can help people collectively stop, the first thing they do every day isn't to write that to-do list that you and I talked about even before the podcast, but actually what do they need to spend a little bit of time thinking, not thinking about the to-do list, but thinking about themselves, thinking about what matters to them, thinking about what they want to achieve, what they want out of life, and then everything, then start planning it backwards accordingly. And then start thinking, well, what do I need to do? Who do I need to become to achieve that? What do I need to do that? And then life becomes happier. You know, we get to do the things that we love. But it has to be done by design, not by accident.
Yeah, I think by design is really important, because I think that sometimes people can think that these things are going to magically work out, you know, because just from the intention side of things. But yeah, quite often there's we need the tools, or we need the guidelines, or we need the accountability, perhaps. There's a whole load of other things that will help us get to our goals. And I'm curious about, I'd like to find out a bit more about coaching culture and kind of how that's developed over time. And just for the listeners, we'll put links to everything in the show notes so they can access your site. But obviously, you know, all the experiences we are talking about so far have led to this point where you're setting up an organization that is trying to get coaching to more people. But how has that developed over time? Like, what was your offering at the beginning? How has that changed? I'm sure it's been a massive journey. And has it been about eight years? Is that what you're...
So it's 7 years, 7 years ago, in February coming up. So that's the 7 year of the life-changing conversation. Can we digitalize coaching? So that happened 7 years ago, and the business set up 7 years next July. So 7 years ago next July. So 6.5 years. Wow. What did it say? It started out as a blank piece of paper, literally a blank piece of A4 paper and a pencil scribbling. What could this be? And my business partner, Adam, is what I call the wizard behind the curtain. Whereas I'm the passionate coaching person and people person, he's absolutely the person who's run businesses, knits it together, you know, through systems, processes, automation, technology, which is not me at all. So we couldn't be further apart on a spectrum of people versus sort of systems, processes. But together, we've got the required skill set. And we started out, and we started by actually thinking, well, is there even anything in this? Or is this just Joe on a soapbox? So we decided to create a magazine, and we called it Coaching Culture. Actually, it was called Coaching Culture Magazine. It wasn't just called Coaching Culture, it was called Coaching. Oh, the journey is phenomenal. Honestly, I say this is this is going to be the Hollywood blockbuster movie, because nobody would quite believe the story. So we started out, we created a magazine, and we started writing articles. Honestly, I've never written a magazine before. And Adam said to me, you're going to have to be the editor of the magazine. I was like, what? Pardon? What? I thought, well, that's the quickest recruitment. That's the quickest job I've ever been given. So we got talking about the topics that might be of interest to people, because they interested me. So I was like my own target market. What would I like to learn more about? And we created this fabulous magazine. We threw it out there. And I remember sitting on the floor in his home office, stuffing envelopes to send them out, literally 200. We got 200 people going, we want your magazine. I was like, oh, this is interesting. We were sat on the floor, handwriting the envelopes, blah, 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 sent them out. And then more people started sharing it on social media, going, look at this, what I've got. And they're like, how do I get hold of that? I want one. And it just snowballed and snowballed. And the Coaching Culture Magazine became a Coaching Culture broader community of people. We then did podcasts, we did webinars, we did the conference, we did awards. It just, the whole thing grew and exploded. I mean, they're all great, great things to connect people on a topic. But we weren't even called Coaching Culture as a business then. The magazine was Coaching Culture, we were called. We then set up solutions to meet what people were asking for from us meeting more people through the magazine. And we created our first digital solution called Mindset. So we set the business up officially and we called it Mindset Software Company. And quite early on, we got challenged. So it was called Mindset. We got challenged for because somebody had the trademark for the word mindset. Who can trademark the word mindset? It's a word. Anyway, we did. And it was like, oh, we haven't got the money to go into battle. We haven't got the money to go into battle with this random company in Sweden, I think they were. So it's like, oh, we're going to have to think again. People, and Adam went, people are resonating with the magazine name, Coaching Culture Magazine. I was like, oh, yeah, they are, yeah. And we were looked for the Coaching Culture domain and it was gone, but nobody was using it. So this is something not many people know. And I honestly, this is the script for the Hollywood movie, I tell you, because it's not in the book. Adam found the person who owned the domain coachingculture.com. And I won't use the word stalk because that's got negative connotations. But using grit and determination and some level of resilience, managed to buy the domain off this lady who thought he was an absolute scammer. She was like, who even are you? She was in Canada. She wasn't using the domain. She didn't realize how valuable it could be. And we managed to buy it off her. And we then changed the name to Coaching Culture. And the rest is history, as they say. But there was also somebody owning coachingculture.co.uk and we didn't have that. And a couple of years later, we still didn't have that. So we had the best one in the world, coachingculture.com. We'd set up a business now called Coaching Culture. And one day, the person who owned coachingculture.co.uk lapsed on their website and we grabbed it on the day they lapsed it and brought it into coachingculture.com. So we then went for world domination of Coaching Culture. Crackers, brilliant crackers. But anyway, so there you go. So that's Coaching Culture. And we started doing our digital solutions and we created Mindset, which is a self-coaching tool. So that was like people cannot, what I felt was criminal, Alex, was that people didn't have these life-changing experiences with professional coaches until they were in probably in their 30s or 40s on a coaching qualification, on a leadership development. And I was like, no, that we need to get it out. People need to be experiencing this when they're younger. So how do we do that? So we created Mindset Self-Coaching Tool and we got our first 10 paying customers for this digital product, including some big names. And it was like, whoa, we've definitely got something. And we took all the feedback, we improved it. And then we carried on building more digital solutions. And we've got over 100 customers around the world now with names such as Warburtons, Specsavers, Wix, Toshiba, Currys, University of Manchester, Etihad Airways, Zurich Insurance. Yeah, just big companies, small companies. But all the things they have in common are they want to help people and scale up coaching in their organizations. And we never say that this is our solutions are to get rid of human coaches. They're absolutely to amplify human coaching. They're to help leaders and managers have better coaching conversations. They're to help people who are quite early on in their career understand about the mindset 20 years earlier than I did. It's that kind of thing. So it comes absolutely from the heart of wanting to help organizations have better experiences at work, people to be more self-aware earlier on in the career, not, you know, when they're on a privileged leadership development program. We didn't want coaching to be an exclusive luxury item. It had to be something experienced by everybody. Without taking away from human coaches, there's absolutely a place for that level of brilliance and expertise. But actually, how do we just have more people having better self-awareness and better conversations in the workplace? And that's fundamentally the purpose behind Coaching Culture. And yeah, a crazy journey, amazing journey. It's been really hard. We've had a global pandemic thrown in the middle of it. it's been, I call it a roller coaster, but with, you know, when you're on a roller coaster, you're just going up to the top and you can feel yourself going, oh, I'm getting nervous. It's been like a roller coaster ride, but you just get into the top and you're about to start going for it and you realize you haven't got your seatbelt on. That's what the journey's been like. And you actually do ride the roller coaster without your seatbelt on. So it's not been the easiest thing I've ever done in my life, but it's been the most amazing thing. And actually, I'm, you know, about to start writing the next chapter of my, it's allowed me to write a book. I mean, I did a lot of that in my own time, but the experiences at Coaching Culture have now been captured, not just at Coaching Culture, actually, throughout my career have been captured in the book, but Coaching Culture solutions are definitely part of the book. And yeah, that's been brilliant.
Well, what's lovely is that I was now going to move us on to talk about the book. And you just moved us in beautifully there, because I think, you know, part of the reason why I've wanted to cover other things about your journey and even about your mum and your inspiration, what have you, is that, you know, these stories have came out in the book. And also, I was lucky enough to come along to your book launch as well.
Thank you.
And so those stories came out because you shared them with us. And, you know, the sort of the energy in the room and everything else was just so amazing. With no further ado, this is Jo's book. For people who aren't viewing the video on the podcast, I'm holding it up. And I'm going to excuse my language for those of a delicate constitution, but it's called No More Shit Managers, 7 Steps to a Coaching Culture. So I love the title. I was thinking maybe we could start there. How did you come up with that title?
Oh, do you know what? I was writing the book and the title, I was mulling around with the title for a long time. And the title came to me only earlier this year. So I'd actually written a lot of the book by then, because ultimately the journey is 7 Steps to a Coaching Culture. The outcome is no more shit managers. So actually, if we get to more and more people having better conversations in organizations, we'll have less issues in the workplace. And most issues can often be pointed back to leaders and managers not being as good as they could be. But if they have a coach mindset and coaching skills, more of the time, work is going to be better. So I was having conversations. It was at an exhibition earlier this year. And I was saying to people, they were like, oh, what do you do at Coaching Culture? And I was like, oh, we exist, our purpose is we make work better. And they were like, oh, that's so lovely. And I was like, we make good leaders and managers even better. They were like, oh, that's good. And I don't know whether I was tired or feeling cheeky, but if I felt that I had a good enough rapport with the person, I'd say to them, to be honest, we're on a mission to eradicate the world of shit managers, and then burst out laughing. And I would laugh along. I'd just be laughing. I was having fun. I was tired. And then people just went crazy for it. They were like, oh, that is absolutely what your mission, your purpose should be that. And I'm like, I can't call that the purpose. That doesn't sound right. They were like, I've had this manager, this manager, this manager. And literally everybody, they lit up. They just went crazy for it. They were like, oh my word, that's amazing. Wow, this is brilliant. This is fabulous. And I was like, it was just, and I just thought, something's just happened. Something special has just happened in my world. So as typical Jo Wright, I went to LinkedIn the day after and I told people about this conversation and the comments, the feedback. This is fabulous. You need to make this your purpose. It shouldn't be we exist to make work better. This should be the absolute out and out mission. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to make it the company mission, but actually it could be the title of the book. But then I thought, oh, my dad doesn't like swearing. How can my first ever book have a swear word in it? So I had a little word with myself and then I reached out to my dad, who's 76 years old. And I was like, Dad, you know, I'm writing a book. And he was like, yeah. I was like, how would you feel if it had a swear word in the title? And he went, and he literally poker faced as anything, just said, as long as it's not the F word, Joe. I thought, bingo, there we go. Dad's approval, job done. There's the title. So that was the story behind the title. It was going to be called something else. It was going to be called Start Small, Go Everywhere, because fundamentally that's how to build a coaching culture. You start small and then you start in any kind of cultural change. You start somewhere and kind of go. And I took that to my team. I was like, oh, I love this. It's a quote from somebody I spoke to a number of years ago. And I just love it. Start small, go everywhere. And they were like, they literally said to me, Joe, that shit. And I was like, oh. I was like, I think it's great. No, Joe, it's shit. I was like, oh, I love it. I love it. I'm so love it. I'm going with that. That's the title. I'm going with it. I love it. And then it was like, Joe, it really, and I was like, it doesn't even make sense. I was like, what do you mean? They were like, you can't start small, then go everywhere. You've got to start small, then go big. Or you start somewhere, then go everywhere. And I was like, oh. And then obviously in a flash of inspiration, the title came to me, unbeknown to me, like a lightning bolt. And then I started feeling nervous about the title. You know, actually, this is bold. This is gonna draw out the haters. And then I thought about it, and I thought, but it's also gonna draw out people who agree with me, who say it as it is, who I'm all about authenticity in the workplace, And I thought it's going to draw out people who love the book and the title. My kind of people will read the book fundamentally. And therefore, I'm hoping they'll love the book. The people who aren't my kind of people, who are probably horrified at the title, aren't my kind of people. And actually, you know, I wrote the book to one person. That's what you do. You write to one person only. And I thought, would my one person like the title? Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's been an amazing journey. And to be honest, I'm still finding, you know, the book's only just gone out. So I can see how many people have bought it. I can see I'm getting feedback from people unsolicited on social media. But I'm also not getting feedback from everybody. So actually, I am, you know, the people who love it tend to tell you. They're like, oh, I love it. Oh, my word. Thank you so much. I'm loving this book. They tend to tell you, and they might share that with other people. But there might be some people who are reading it going, wow, what is this? I'm not loving this book. But I genuinely think that people who are my kind of people will really quite enjoy it. Because it's, do you know what? Whenever I wrote it to one person, it's a book that I would really like myself. So I've written a book that I enjoy. So there's two people who like it, the person I wrote it for and me.
Maybe you wrote it for yourself. No.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a bit like doing the magazine side of what would I enjoy? You know, what would I enjoy? What gives me joy? What do I want to learn more about? And the book, you know, some of the stories in there, that, you know, they're proper toe curlers, but they're quite funny when you read them. Some of them are funny stories, but they're real. And actually, if you can see humour in stuff that makes you feel uncomfortable in your life, but if you can look back with some level of that is actually quite funny when you say it out loud, then you've got something special there. If you can make fun of yourself, and you've read the book and you can see I make fun of myself in the book, there's self-deprecating humor in there, there's vulnerability, there's just real life. And I think the more we can, you know, enjoy that kind of storytelling, we can have fun with it.
Yeah, completely. And it harkens back to that, you know, that vulnerability I was talking about earlier, yeah, which is one of the things I respect to you. And in fact, you know, even at the book launch, one of the stories that you chose to read us from the book was about where you'd essentially done something wrong from a feedback, yeah, perspective. And so the fact that, you know, you could have chosen at your own book launch to only do the bits that were about all the successes you've had, which were many, and you still told us a funny story about a time when it hadn't gone so right. and just on that title, one thing I'd encourage listeners to do, and why I think it's a great title, is because a bit like you said, when you kind of, the flash of inspiration came to you about the title, and you were telling people at that event about what it is that your business is really there to do, I think that, you know, listeners now, I would be very surprised if most people listening can't think of some shit managers they've had. And in fact, I would be very surprised if most people haven't had enough that they could be ranked in some sort of shitness Olympics, you know, who got the gold, silver and bronze. Yep. Between those people. And I think it also makes me think what's clever about the title is that it's not about saying there are a group of people who are terrible managers and they're like instinctively or naturally. It's that we all have the potential to be good and be bad, including yourself as the examples that you've given.
Totally.
And then you realize that coaching was a way to make yourself and others better managers. But it's like we can identify with it both because we've had managers like that, but also because at points we've all been managers like that or had some aspects of it if we've been in a leadership position.
Absolutely. And I knew that, you know, fundamentally, if we're going to change the world of work forever, and that is my aspiration, then the title had to not, it couldn't be vanilla. It couldn't just sit on a bookshelf and it just blend in. It had to jump off the shelf. It had to jump off off Amazon. It had to jump off the bookshelf in a shop. It had to jump off and grab attention. And the people who would want to read it are my kind of people. People who would pick up that book with a title, what are my kind of people? So, you know, even yesterday, I did a post on LinkedIn about the book and the title, and I just did me holding it kind of going, "Woo, I'm so excited," which I still am. And, you know, somebody yesterday was like, kind of gave me a cynical comment like, you know, a very hopeful title, but it's never going to change. Words to that effect. And it was like, I could have written so much, but it's like, you know, we've got to make these changes and we have to have hope. We have to have hope that things can be better, because without that, we've got nothing. So actually we have to put the, you know, I know people who have become better by being better leaders and managers, by having some skills that they didn't have before, by adopting a different mindset. So we can all be more, we can all be better. We've got to give it every opportunity. It's interesting. I'm getting, you know, people sharing it, unsolicited feedback on social media. Then I'm also getting people writing to me private going, "I can't like your post in case my manager sees it and thinks I'm talking to them." So there's a lot of fear out in organizations. There's a lot of fear to say it as it is. Whereas I don't have that fear.
I'm smiling because I remember a counterexample of that from your launch, where I think you told me that people pre your launch, not people who've been invited to your launch, but wasn't there like there's a big sign with a book title, and didn't you say some people just came in, and did they even pose with their manager next to it or something?
Yep. So I've got this giant book at the entrance of the book launch, predominantly to show people for the book launch which room we were going to be in, but nonetheless that giant book is gonna come everywhere with me. It's even in the room I'm in now doing the podcast with you. It's my giant book, and people saw it on this easel stand, and it was like, "Who are you taking a picture with it?" And they were stood by the side, they're going, this is my manager, come on manager, I'm going to take a picture with this book. And then they were sharing it themselves on social media, like really proudly, to stand "No More Shit Managers" book title with their manager. And that just made my heart swell and burst with pride and happiness that actually that was my book. They were taking a picture, and it was like crackers. It's like, what are you doing? How is this happening? But we could talk about the book launch and exactly what happened on that day, because yeah, something special happened on that day.
Hugely. I mean, I think it would be, it's really lovely. I'll speak at some point a little bit about what it was like on the other side as an attendee at your book launch. But I think one of the things is that for listeners is that a lot of people might be interested in one day writing a book themselves. Yes. And in fact, Robbie, whose podcast this is, Robbie Swale, he He has a series of books helping people to get creative projects off the ground, including books. He's written a series of books himself. And I think it's something that is a really powerful way for people to share their message with the world. Yes. So if we talk a bit about the book launch, maybe we can talk a bit about how, you know, you shared in the book and on the day a bit about the whole process, how it happened. But wherever you like, if you want to start telling us a little bit about how you actually started writing the book, to anything up to and including the book launch. I just think it would be really lovely for listeners to learn a bit about that.
Super. So firstly, I never ever thought I'd be writing a book. So it was never on any level of vision board. Probably it should have been in some sort of goal somewhere. I was always a bookworm. I'm a bookworm. I used to, as a kid with my mum, we used to go shopping on a Saturday, and one of the shops I had to go in was my local town book shop. And I would always come away with one or two books, you know, and we didn't have a lot of money, but I was gifted with books, whether it was Enid Blyton, whether it was Mallory Towers. This is back in the 70s, showing my age. And then I progressed on to some more sort of high, you know, kind of more Jane Austen and or whatever else. So I was a bookworm. I loved books. And then I think throughout my career, earlier on in my career, probably up until the age of 44, didn't read as many books, really. Didn't invest as much in my personal development, probably waited for the organization to do it for me, you know, and that kind of, obviously I was growing, but actually it was not through any learning or intentional learning from myself, apart from the coaching qualification. And then I remember my business partner telling me that his life changed when he read a book a week. I was like, what? A book a week? You know, and I started really then started thinking about, actually, I love reading books. How can I start reading more and more? So I started reading more and more and learning and growing. I absolutely love books, and whether it's on Audible or I do love the good book. Like I said, I love curling up on the sofa and reading. And then my business partner, when we were busy creating, you know, Coaching Culture Community, the magazine, the podcast, the conference, the awards, he's like, we need to write a book. And as I said to you on the book launch, when he says, we need to write a book. No. He meant you need to write a book, Joe. But nonetheless, that would never have even entered my head. We need to write a book. But I didn't know how to. I was like, where do you start? I've read loads of books. Where do you even start? And my own book launch was the second book launch I'd ever been to. And at the very first book launch, I met a book coach. And as I said at the book launch, that word again, coach, I was then taught how to write a book, the structure. And it became paint by numbers. It just then became about filling in the gap. So I now know how to write a book. Not only any old book, but a book that grabs attention, that will do well. The book will do well because of the teachings I had to learn how to write a book. And the process was really interesting. So I started May 2022. And literally on June the 8th, 2022, my father-in-law died. So I'd written one chapter of the book, and my father-in-law knew it. And he was so excited. He always read the magazines cover to cover. He was like, he's probably my number biggest fan out of everybody in my world. So, so proud. And he used to read all the magazines, and he was like so excited about the book. And he passed away really suddenly like that. He was an old man, but nonetheless, he went really quickly. And it kind of ground the book writing to a halt. I really struggled to get back in the flow. This was now only 3 weeks of writing the book. Anyway, I kind of struggled and I trundled through. And then my uncle, who was my mum's twin brother, who had lived with us all through my childhood, passed away suddenly. So that was now two people in 3 months gone, boom. And my book writing ability, my mindset, everything was just like, oh, I'm really struggling with this. But I kept going. I kept going. I kept going. I kept chipping away 500 words here, 700 words there, 200 words, 50 words. I just kept going. I kept going. But life was really starting to get me down. So this is now only 2022. And, you know, I'd had these two bereavements. My husband was immobile through having a major knee operation. And the business was in a tough place. I was getting ready for the Coaching Culture Conference and Awards. And I just felt like everything was crumbling in my head. So I turned to somebody at the Coaching Culture Conference who put me in contact with a fabulous coach. And literally within weeks, I'd sparked back to being not just my former self, better than my former self. She took me to another level. I was literally crumbling, and she took me beyond where I was previously at my best. And I found my book writing mojo again, probably only January 2023. And by March, I'd finished the book. Literally just finished the book, absolutely blasted through it. And then I sent it over to the editors who were part of the book coach who connected me with, and they just sat on it for a couple of months. So I didn't really pick it back up until May time, and then the editing process. Oh, that was so painful. It was like death by a thousand cuts, because what you do is you just write something, you just get a load of words out, and then you go, right, now I'll put them in some sort of sensible order. And that's the painful bit. And so I actually only finished doing any final level of edits about 4 weeks before the book was in people's hands, where it was like, okay, enough's enough now. You could edit this forever. And then, you know, this, you know, and actually the book, that what I loved about the book was sitting and reflecting on stories that I'd experienced throughout my career, but also interviewing people for case studies. Oh, that just filled me with joy. And then distilling what they said into, you know, literally 600 words or whatever, but we'd mid on a call for an hour or two. And it was just a joyful, joyful experience. And then suddenly I had this book. I had a book. And even now I'm still pinching myself. I've got a book. And, you know, I'd love more people to read it. I'd love more people to review it and share their thoughts on Amazon. Because fundamentally, if we are collectively going to change the world of work, we need people to read this book. And I love what you said before. It's a love letter to humanity. So whatever the title is, actually quite a, you know, hit you between the eyes title, actually the book's a book of hope, a book of inspiration. But it isn't just hope and inspiration. It's also a practical guide of how to do this. This is proof it can be done. So you need to go do it. And it's, you know, I think it's an easy read. It's an enjoyable read. Well, that's my view. That's my humble opinion on my own book.
No, I mean, it's perhaps a good time for me to tell the listeners, well, I love the book. I thought it was very well written. And I thought that you made the sort of ambitions within it feel quite achievable because you broke things down.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you did that. I think it's, again, I can kind of see things that I imagine you've learned from or experienced through doing coaching in the book, which is that I feel like you met people where they were.
Thank you.
And I think that's a really critical thing, because the book, that person who wrote the comment, for example, on LinkedIn, about, you know, like, that's not going to happen, I presume is not somebody who's read the book, because firstly, the book makes clear how it could happen. And secondly, I think what the book really says is we can, even by making small differences, you can make a lot of difference, that it's about a process. Just as in the same way that with something like coaching, it's not like we have some coaching, we never need coaching again. This is an ongoing process of people working together that is based on a set of values and principles. And also, you really indicate in the book to me that it depends very much on the life cycle of the organization and the complexities therein. So when you give the examples of the case studies, you outline what was happening in the business at that time and what the particular issues were. Yeah. And so sometimes, for example, I remember in one case, you talk about a business that, because it started to put some of these things in pre-pandemic, I think,
yeah,
when the pandemic hit, was actually in a better position than it would have been. And so it doesn't, I don't think your book makes it sound like these things are easy in so much as it's a process. You know, not everybody will be on board. You have to convince people, it takes time. But I think it's very convincing in that this will make a difference. And it's about starting to have these conversations and see things differently.
Yes, absolutely that.
And to care about this stuff, to be honest, to actually care.
To be intentional in how you're going to go about it and don't give up. You know, we could all give up at the first hurdle, but then that's how far you get. You get to the first hurdle. But actually, if you want to keep going and keep going, you've got to overcome hurdles, obstacles. You've got to be that first follower of actually we can do this. Because if everybody thought like the person who commented yesterday, what a dismal, grim world we'd be in. You know, actually, we have to have people who do want to make a difference. And I think a lot of people go into, you know, leadership or HR roles because they want to make a difference. They want to implement positive change. Some of them don't. They might just want to do it for the absolute out and out power or whatever else. But actually, I think a lot of people want to do things because they want to make things better. And actually, with the book is fundamentally built on that philosophy of we can be better. We can make things better, but we have to do it together. And this book is just, it can show you how to do it. It show, you know, and you heard at the book launch, you know, the organization who actually won Coaching Culture of the Year, because they are doing it. They're doing it all the time. They've been on their journey and they're already further on than a lot of others. And that makes me really proud to think that actually, you know, we at Coaching Culture are working with organizations who are making a difference and see our solutions as something that can help them as well to actually go deeper through technology into the organization. It doesn't mean, say, they get rid of human coaches or they don't get other people, you know, coaching in the organization. You know, this is about how they can look at all different opportunities to at every point in time for people to be having better conversations intentionally. And it's really interesting because the people, the absolute bullseye target market for the book is, or the person I wrote to is a senior leader in a people team in an organization who is influencing thinking about culture and the cultural strategy. But actually, I've already had bulk orders of the book for managers because there's examples in there of poor management, but there's also what you should be doing differently. So there's both in there. So people are buying it for managers and leaders as well, for them to kind of read it and go, actually, we can be better. We just have to stop and think how.
One question that came up for me after reading the book, and the sort of question that, you know, I just has been percolating in my head, and I don't know whether this is something you've thought about, but, you know, I very much presume that you'd like your book to sell well internationally, because Visa, it's not like there's only ship managers in the UK where we're speaking from. Have you thought about, or maybe this will be something that will happen more as feedback comes in from other countries, what the interplay is of culture, like the prevailing culture in a country?
Yes.
And the way in which people make decisions. So, for example, I worked for 2 years in Japan, and the ways in which decisions were made, I was an assistant language teacher. And the way that the children, the pupils made the decisions in the classroom was much more consensus-based, for example. Now, I can't say that translates into Japanese companies, but I think there'll be aspects that will just be very different. Was it something on your mind as you're writing the book, or is it something you think you'll get feedback about as people review it from other countries?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think it's really interesting. In week one of the book going on sale, I sold it in Japan. And the person who bought it is from a very well-known social media company and shared it on LinkedIn and said, your book is now in Japan. And so really interesting you said Japan.
Amazing.
Yeah, really interesting. So I wrote to one person, and that one person on my book is in the UK, and it's a person who I know, who I engage with. Actually, I'm going to take feedback now on this journey. And it's really interesting you say that. I've written down this morning part of what my experiences I want to experience now in life. And one of them is, how do I become an international best-selling author? I'm a best-selling author on Amazon in the UK, but actually, how does that become international best-selling? So that is that will now start feeding. What do I need to learn? What do I need to do from a marketing perspective? How do I need to get the book out more? What feedback do I need to take? Who do I need to become to make that happen?
Brilliant. Yeah. And I'm pleased. I was definitely going to mention, because you mentioned it on the book launch day, about the Amazon bestseller, which, you know, you have my woo there, I think is amazing to celebrate. I mean, that must feel amazing in and of itself.
It is, but you don't keep the badge all the time. So no. The minute something else gets bestseller, the minute you're trumped on the bestseller top trump game, then that badge has disappeared. So it was a moment. I don't even know if I screenshotted it at the time. So yes, it happened, and it happened actually quite quickly on day one of the book launch. And I got bestseller in one category, but actually I then was really aspiring in the HR book category, and it got that. And I did get a screenshot of number one was my book. Number two was Simon Sinek's book. And he also had number four. So I screenshotted that, and that needs to just be, I've only screenshot it. It's on my phone, that moment in time. Come on, Simon. Come on, Simon.
That's beautiful. Was one of those books Start With Why?
Well, that was number four.
Well, no, the reason that I mentioned that is because...
That was number four, what?
Well, because in your book, in your recommended books, exactly. That book's in there. So I'm thinking, how cool is that? That's setting an intention to the universe. You praise someone else's book and then got higher in a category above it. That's beautiful.
Like. And I screenshotted the moment, and I'll never forget that moment. That'll be another critical... So if Simon Sinek's listening to the podcast, come on, Simon, we need a conversation. How'd you get back to number one?
I hope he's an avid listener, and you know, I hope there'll be a back and forth on this, trying to get that top spot right now.
Exactly.
I would love to get into it. It was really good to hear, you know, a bit of the actual process of writing the book. I'm sorry you went through such a tough time, and it's impressive awful. That you managed to get the book done in such a short space of time. But I think it really shares with listeners how, you know, you're a person I look up to, and you're a very real, vulnerable person. So I know everything isn't always perfect in your world. But I think it's very easy from the outside, when you see somebody, they've got a successful business and they seem to really enjoy their work, both of which are true, both of which you do. But there's lots of points along the way, as you've described also for your business, as well as for the book, where it feels like, you know, things aren't going so well, or you're a bit unsure, or people have imposter syndrome or anything. But one of the things that I so liked about the book launch is it felt, in our careers, in our lives, we can have good days and bad days, and sometimes they can come swiftly after each other. But that book launch felt like a snapshot in time in the career of Joe Wright that nobody will ever take away from you, which will be like, you have achieved something, and the people who were there to share in that moment and enjoy that moment with you. Like, how did that book launch feel? Because I could tell at times you were quite emotional, I could tell you're excited. Like, how did it feel to you to be doing that?
I genuinely don't think there is a word anywhere to describe what something happened in that room that day. The best word I can come up with right now is magical. Something magical happened. And I don't think it just happened for me. I think it happened for people in the room. The feedback I've had since, the messages I've had since, people described it as inspirational. They described it as emotional. Somebody described that I touch people. I'm like, do I? You know, and something was, I can't describe, it was magical. It was spectacular. I will never forget that book launch as long as I live. Ever. It was I mashed together a bunch of strangers, family, friends, and work friends. You turned up not knowing anybody other than me. Other people turned up in that room not knowing anybody other than me. Yet by the end of it, people knew each other. People got to know each other more than I spent time with people. So that's my only regret, is actually I could have done with a bit longer to spend time with everybody. I felt like the bride without a groom, even though my husband was there, but it was like a bride with a groomless wedding, you know. It's like,
yeah,
I got to speak to everybody but nobody, if that made sense.
Yeah,
but there was a huge, there was a feeling of magic in the room, and it was obviously shared all over LinkedIn, and people seemed to get something really special from it, and I'm still getting feedback about it now. Yeah, and I'm trying to harness that feeling right now and to take it on to the next part of my life chapter, because I have taken a step to the side of coaching culture recently, deliberately and intentionally so, to unlock whatever's next for me in my life. Coaching culture is perfectly and brilliantly set up now. It's great, you know. I've kind of, the keys are over there with my business partner to just own it, drive it. I'm still doing some interviews and content for the Learncast Content Hub, but actually, fundamentally, I am free to go and write the next chapter. And that was intentional and agreed upon by both me and my business partner for the launch of the book. Let me go on I'm not getting any younger. It's back to that life, the way I think about life. And it's time to write the next chapter. And I am just starting to think now, what could that be like?
I think I think the launch is maybe a beautiful, you know, pivot point for that to work around, because I thought there was something special in the room. And as you say, you know, there were those of us who didn't know anybody apart from you, and people knew lots of people. There were people from all walks of life, family, friends. I mean, at one point, as you know, I was in the queue to get my book signed from you, and I randomly started speaking to somebody who was your friend from university. And we'd met online, but I was meeting you for the first time in person that day, and she's known you for quite a while. And what's so brilliant about that was that it felt to me, it's like the opposite of when sometimes there's situations where you're like, you know, somebody has got some level of success and maybe you feel a bit jealous or begrudging, or you don't like them, or you don't think they deserve it or something. And it was whatever the opposite was of that. Like, we were all there to celebrate with you. But what was so interesting for me is that our experience of you was all very different. And then there was something that united us as well. And so, you know, that meant, you know, seeing one of the people who has a quote in your book, for example, was one of the people I spent a decent amount of time with on the day. It was just really friendly and welcoming to me. And to see her, who works for an organization that is a client of yours, sort of singing your praises. You know, I overheard somebody in a queue who was kind of spontaneously acting as an advocate for your business, where they were saying, oh, their rates are very reasonable and they do really well and you should talk to them. And I was like, but that person wasn't even a member of your team. They were someone you work with. So I think there's something very beautiful in that as a human being, to be able to come together and to sort of, you know, to celebrate where another human being has got to, and all the things that come in that journey in that point, the good and the bad, the heartache, the exciting things. And then, almost as if you're emerging from a chrysalis, there was clearly a feeling that this might lead to somewhere else exciting, even though I have no idea what your plans are in that. And I'd love to get into that a little bit now. But, you know, there was something happening on that day that was like a magical moment to be at. And you couldn't really be at it again. Like, in a year, you wouldn't be at that same special point.
100%. I agree. I absolutely agree. And it's really interesting because I felt something. It was so fabulous that all those people came together. People travel from far and wide to be in that room to celebrate with me, which was wonderful. And I felt really humbled by that. I was like, whoa, this is whoa, I just want to bottle whatever's happening right now. I want to bottle it. But equally, I also think people know that my heart is absolutely full of goodness, that actually if they're part of that with me, they'll be on this journey with me, and I know I can help more and more people be with me on this journey. And there's something in my heart that's talking community at the minute, but I don't know what that is. How can I bring people together to to create that magic more and more, and me just be the, you know, the conductor of that orchestra, really. What could that look like? Because there was something very special, you know, and I don't know what it is, but I'm going to take some time over Christmas and throughout January to really start to plan intentionally what's next. So, but I'm going to do it from a point of what experiences do I want to have in my life that fill me with joy, and then figure out, well, how do I make those experiences happen? And they will absolutely be about inspiring people to be more. They absolutely will. It will absolutely be about connecting people and bringing people together. It will also, I'd love it to also be about travel. I think the book is going to do something, but I haven't quite figured that out yet. So at the minute, I'm at another point in my life where I've got a blank piece of paper that I can start colouring in. And coaching culture was a blank piece of paper. I said to you, it started off with a blank piece of A4 paper. I'm at that point again, and I'm going to start filling in what does next look like for me, but only working on things that fill me with joy, and only working with people that fill me with joy. So actually the experiences that I have, and surround myself with people who also want to be on the kind of be better journey, really.
When you were starting off your career, or when you were a child, did you have some idea of what it was that you wanted to do with your life professionally? And that, like, how does that look now? Now you've got to this point you're at. How do you feel about that?
So I wanted to be two things. One, well, mainly number one, which was an air hostess. I wanted to travel the world. And then my mum said, and so I embarked on learning languages. I was really good at languages at school. And I just wanted to travel. And I knew it was going to have something international. And international hasn't massively panned out. I did live abroad while I was at university, and like I said, I learned languages and I was good at them. But actually, and I never thought it would be about helping or caring for others. I didn't really know I just knew it was something to do with travel, which is going to be a part of my next part of my chapter. There's got to be some element of experiences. I think that's the word, isn't it? It's experiences, it's adventures. And if I can help people achieve more for themselves and believe in themselves more, than I absolutely will do. And you know, I also was always interested in products and marketing and brands. So that's what got me on my first corporate career path, really, is sort of brands and what, you know, and I always got a buzz from kind of seeing how consumers behave. But actually, as I've gone through my career more, it's not so much about consumers. It's actually about people being more, I think. But then again, I've spent 8 hours of learning this weekend on social media, you know, on social media. And obviously at the minute, I just do quite a bit on LinkedIn, but that's it. There's a bigger world out there. Should I be doing more stuff somewhere else? Should I, you know, if I want to impact people deeper and broader and further, then actually I've got to think about what social media is the way to do that. And like coaching culture has been that platform to get coaching out more to the masses, which it absolutely has. Actually, what's next on that platform, using technology and using the things that I love doing, and I love connecting people. I love, you know, supporting people. So I'm still figuring it all out, to be honest, Alex, and it's not clear at the moment, but I just need to take that time to think, and I've just started doing that right now.
I love the idea that you mentioned about travel, and then when I asked you to go back to what it was you originally wanted to do, travel was, you know, such a big part of it. So that really works as that sort of, you know, that pivot point idea. Yeah. And also, I'm excited for you because when you're talking about getting your work out to more people, you've got such a fantastic model, as you were just describing, through coaching, coaching culture, yeah. and through the ways that you use social media, particularly LinkedIn, but also you've got yeah. a podcast, which is how I found you in the first place. Like, you are in a much better position, I'd say, than many people, certainly many first-time authors, to build those things. And also, I think that, you know, naturally you tend towards that thing around bringing people together.
Yeah.
And so there's something beautiful in that, and capturing, as you say, that magic of the day. Because I was really curious about what your energy would be like today. You know, I hope on this call you'd be, you know, excited to speak to me. But other than that, I thought you could be actually very tired, because the launch wasn't that long ago. And if you're anything like me, sometimes we have something that we build up to, even something really hugely positive. And then afterwards, we're a bit like, oh, where did that go? And as you say, like, if you could have lengthened it and just had time to speak to everyone individually yeah. more, or do more, you know, do some activities with us or whatever, that there's so many possibilities to tap into that stuff. But your energy seems so excited for the future. It's just really great to see, like, really.
I feel like the book launch was literally the start, the springboard. Mm. My energy has just gone higher and higher, and I can feel it. I mean, obviously, I was exhausted after the book launch, and the weekend I spent a lot of my time thanking people, writing to people. I was getting feedback. I was getting private messages. I spent the whole of the Saturday writing to people and thanking them and absorbing it, and because I was getting bombarded in a good way. So I wanted to make sure I responded to everybody. It's just given me the platform for greater energy. And actually, the moment for me to calm it down is actually across Christmas, but also into January, where I am spending the time to think and learn. That's the only thing that's going in my diary, think and learn. I've got, and I'm sure I'll be on social media sharing thoughts and learnings, but I've actually got two work things booked in January, and that's it. I'm not booking in many more. It's thinking and learning time. So that will calm me down with my energy levels, because it'll be really reflective time. I'll be really absorbing, and I've already started it. But this week is hugely busy. Again, connecting with people. People are coming to me with thoughts, ideas. I've been invited onto a number of podcasts, a radio show as well about the book. I just know that once I get really clear with my, you know, what I want next, then I can start making it happen.
One thing I wanted to make sure we covered in the latter part of our talk together today is we've found out a bit about your journey through coaching, and a bit about some things you've done and setting up your business, coaching culture, and about the book and about the things that go next. Some people who listen to the podcast are either very new coaches, or yeah. they're people who are even just thinking about coaching. You know, for me, when I first started to listen to the podcast, for example, I was thinking about going into coaching. And it introduced me to a lot of big figures in the coaching sector. But also, importantly for me, it made me understand that there are so many ways to be a coach. Yeah. And another thing that I find very interesting about your career is I personally think that I'm interested in a mix of doing coaching and doing consulting and doing other yeah. things. I like the idea of having a mix. Mm. There'll be some people who just want to coach, and there's some people who want to have a mix. And I think, like, at this point you're at, where you're just so excited about everything going forward, and you've just had this recent success with the book. But if you were going to go back to when you first heard about coaching, or first getting into coaching, like, what advice would you give yourself? You know, what do you think is most important for people to do who are interested in this thing called coaching? Do you have any advice?
Yeah. I think the best advice is to become the best marketer. You don't have to be the best coach in the world, or you can be the best coach in the world, but if nobody knows about you, then actually, you know, you'll only be the best coach to one or two people. But actually, you know, the first thing, people come to me all the time and they're asking me for my advice, my thoughts. And I always say, you know, how many connections have you got on LinkedIn? How many people do you know? How many comments do you make on other people's? How much do you engage with other people and their posts? How many people do you know? Oh, yeah, I'm not really good on LinkedIn. I'm like, well, how are you going to get known? That's the way to do it. If you're wanting to go through into organizations to be their coach. Oh, right. You know, I started out coaching culture with like I said, less than 7 years ago. And I had about 1,000 connections on LinkedIn. I'm just under 14,000 now. So it's taken all that time, but and it's through a mixture of me connecting with people and them connecting with me. But you know, you've got to become the best marketer. And I remember when I rang Barefoot to ask them, I wanted to ask a few questions, and Kim answered the phone. It was Friday afternoon at like 4:45, and I was like, oh, I've got the business owner, because she's obviously the only one in the office right now. And I was like, will I be able to set myself up as a coach? Will I be able to set my own business up? And she said, oh, there's a lot more to it than kind of coaching. I was like, oh, really? She was like, sales, marketing, this business development. I was like, okay, cool, I can do that, because I've got, I had such a broad career. And I think that will be the best advice, is actually don't be afraid of shouting about who you are, but don't be afraid about connecting with others and being yourself. But you've got to get people to know you, have an opinion, stand for something, but be yourself. Because people often say to me, oh, how do you choose what kind of coach you're going to be? And I just say, I don't, I just be me. You know, that the only thing I can be is me. But do you need to be a niche? Do you have to have a niche? I was like, well, I don't. My coaching is all about the other person, so it's not about me, but all I can be is me. So using those two ingredients, you know, we if somebody wants me, then they've got me. But I can't be anybody else, and I can't try and be anybody else. So I think actually marketing is probably the biggest learning I've had, even while I've been doing coaching culture, is actually the power of marketing, but also being authentically you as well, because you will attract the people who you're meant to attract by just being yourself. And we saw that at the book launch, I think, you know, we saw that level of attraction by just, you know, being yourself. And as long as your heart's a good heart, then I think that works.
I think also what I've observed with you and what you've told me about the way in which your career has developed as a coach is that you've found things and you've experimented to work out what works for you from a kind of marketing sharing things perspective. So yeah, that could be anything from the magazine where suddenly you are the editor.
Yes.
And then it can also be things like, you love LinkedIn, I love LinkedIn. Not everybody does, but there's such a multiplicity of ways in which people can share about what they do that they should try to find one that resonates with them.
Yeah, totally.
You know, something that makes them actually excited to get up and do some of that. And also, I think that thing about authentic is so important, because when I help people with personal branding, I get the impression that people think there are certain things that they absolutely have to do that they don't want to, and that puts them off doing any personal branding related activities at all. But it's a lot of it is finding out what you like, what works for you, what resonates with you, and being a bit experimental, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love LinkedIn. I didn't used to. I used to, you know, procrastinate for hours about doing a post. Whereas now I literally just, you know, when I do one, I just sort of think, what's gone on in my world this week that others might learn from, that they might find useful, that they find, you know, useful, inspirational, that it might trigger something in their mind to go do something different that day. So I literally, a lot of it is just in the moment from my heart. I've not done I started doing videos. I've not done one for a few weeks because I've actually had quite a bit of a cold. And I've kind of powered through the job where I thought, oh, there's no way I'm going on a video sort of talking like this, because that's exactly how I sounded. It's only just started to shift now. So I'm probably going to do a video today, actually, about something I shared with you before we started recording, which is about I've put in my diary next year for 30 minutes every day to learn. And I think I might just ask people on LinkedIn, how much are they intentionally learning? You know, I did a talk last week for women in leadership, and one of the pieces of advice was kind of what, you know, about it. Well, I can't remember. It was asking a key piece of advice, and I was like, you have to invest in your own development. Your career is yours to own, nobody else's. Don't wait for somebody to suddenly give you a career. You have to make it happen yourself. And I've had such a fabulous portfolio. I've had such breadth. Absolute. People just think careers upwards on a ladder, but it's not. It's broad. And that breadth gives experiences that you wouldn't always happen if you just went straight up. So I might be doing a video later on that. Let's watch this space for that.
I think you should have done the one with the cold, because the sound of it, one of my favourite shows is the League of Gentlemen, and the it sounds more like how Edwards and Tubbs might be talking. So I like that. Go on. No, I was just. I think the idea of that learning is so beautiful, because I think that again, it's kind of that space to prioritise yourself and your own needs, and that taking ownership. You sound like a person who really takes ownership of what it is you want to do, whatever that might be.
Totally. But I think it's been my learnings and all the reading and listening to other people, you know, learn what the best people do and do that. It's that. Actually, who are your role models? Who are you looking up to? Who could be your mentors? Learn from them and do that. Do more of that. Hang out with people who are where you want to be. You know, look up rather than anywhere else. And if you're looking up, you'll start going up.
Well, it's really nice you say that, Joe, because that's why I contacted you originally. When we first started speaking, I just thought there's a person who has a lot of things in their career that I admire and would like to learn from. And so that's exactly why I contacted you in the first place. So that's exactly what happened.
Thank you. And I've been very, very fortunate, because I believe that your teacher arrives at the right time, and my business partner arrived at the right time. You know, literally going to that random networking event, never went to one since, but random networking events, decided to gatecrash my way onto his course, you know, which I did. He moved, you know, there's been some literally connecting the dots looking backwards. But, you know, I was very fortunate to learn from somebody who built a very successful business. And then we went again. And I've learned so much. So very fortunate. I now need to figure out for me, what does Joe Wright speaker and coach look like? You know, with coaching culture still there, brilliantly, I'm still doing the, you know, they're, like I said, the LearnCast interviews. But what does Joe Wright speaker and coach look like? Obviously, I do want to do more speaking. I love it. I love inspiring people. I love sharing the good word. But also, where can the book go, and how can I bring people together? There's lots of things bubbling away in my mind. So I need to figure out, you know, who do I need to hang out with to get to that next level again?
There was just one sort of final thing I wanted to ask you about, and it's kind of a slightly practical area. But on the show, we often talk about how when people are building their coaching business, you know, how much they charge and how much they charge now. But with you on the show, I thought it'd be just interesting to ask, if people are thinking about how to make a living out of coaching, or how to make a living out of coaching plus something else, when you started off, or how you think about it now, you know, it's very useful exercise that you think people can do to help them think about some of these issues. Is there any advice you'd give?
I think about the value that the person is going to receive. So what difference is it going to make to them personally, either to their own income levels or to their organization? You know, by them becoming somebody different, what is that value? You know, and if you're coaching a CEO of an organization and you fundamentally get them to another level, that could add millions to the bottom line of an organization, or it could save millions. So let's not devalue coaching. So it is about the value that you can give, and it could be through your experiences, through the, you know, the thing about coaching is you have to spend a lot of time continually developing. That's part of the gig. You know, if you're going to be the best, you know, in your game, you have to continue learning. So really, the value you're giving to other people is the value you've invested in yourself to be that person. So think about value rather than price.
Oh, I love the idea of the value you've put into yourself to be that person. I think that's a really helpful frame, because it's particularly helpful because, and this was very much in your case, and I think also in mine, in many people's, that when you start to become a coach, you don't suddenly, you're not starting from absolutely nothing. You're bringing with you all your skills, your experience, your understanding of the world, your understanding of people and of yourself as a person. And if you think about, you know, all the value that we might have put into ourselves from any self-study and university and just learning from other human beings, we can find a way for our coaching and our offer, and hopefully through being authentic, to wholeheartedly share that with the world, then that's a value that people are paying for.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that should be a lot.
And it absolutely should be the value that you're giving, and that what they're going to get on the back of it. You know, some of the experiences that you can help others get are life-changing. You know, that's priceless. You know, my coaching qualification, I could have paid for a nice holiday. That would have been a really nice once-in-a-lifetime experience. My coaching qualification has changed my life forever.
That's really helpful advice. So is there anything else before we close that you think either that we haven't covered, or that you'd particularly like listeners to know or take away? Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I think one of my final pieces would be for coaches, if they're listening to this, is to I often say they have to take their own medicine. They're very good at helping others become newer versions of themselves, to be brilliant, but actually they've got to look after themselves as well. So what are they continually doing? And it isn't just about the best coaching skills in the world. It is also about marketing and actually, you know, creating the environments for them to experience more learnings, or just keep continually doing what you help others with. Do it for yourself as well.
That's really helpful. And I think it's often, I think, when we're coaching other people, that if we've had coaching ourselves, we know what it's like to be on the other side of that. And I certainly found that when I was in a mentoring role rather than a coaching role, that I would, if I gave people advice, I'd think, but why am I not taking that advice myself? Or, you know, why am I not thinking about those things or believing in myself or whatever I was saying to somebody else?
Absolutely. And when people choose a coach, they often look at somebody who they look to, you know, for actually what can I get and learn from that person. So I think, you know, I think that's so true. I think coaches have got to look after themselves as well, because there's so many coaches out there. But one thing that nobody can take away from anybody is that they can't take themselves away. And that's who they've got to invest in first.
That's really helpful. So it just remains to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast, especially because I know what a busy time and exciting time this is for you. I really recommend that people check out your book. I can certainly recommend it. I'm looking forward to writing my own Amazon review on it very soon. I'm excited about doing that. And I think beyond the book, I think for people to check out your work in general and the work of Coaching Culture, but also just to watch this space about what it is that you're doing next, because by the time this podcast comes out, I'll be very excited to see exactly what those next steps might be. I'm very excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex. And thank you for inviting me on today. It's absolute pleasure and privilege to be here and share anything I can share with people that may spark some inspiration or help them on their journey too.
Thank you, Jo. Thank you so much for being here today. And I'm sure the listeners will have got so much out of it. Take care.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Robbie here. And for those who don't know me, I'm the founder and creator of The Coach's Journey. Thanks so much for listening to this conversation between Alex and Joe. And I've just got a few things to share with you before you go on to whatever else you've got in the rest of your day. The first is, I've recently published on The Coach's Journey website a new free ebook in which I explain a new idea, the coaching business flywheel, which I think creates some genuine new understanding about how coaching businesses work. It identifies the only five things, as far as I can tell, that every coach who has a sustainable business has to do. And the good news is they also become a self-fulfilling, virtuous cycle that builds your coaching business. Not necessarily fast. This isn't about six easy steps to a six-figure business. This is about what are the five things that if you work really hard at them and are brave and keep putting yourself out there, you can create a solid, sustainable coaching business with. So if you want that, all you got to do is head to thecoachesjourney.com, sign up to the mailing list there, or click the big coaching business flywheel button, and you can get that ebook free of charge. And you've got all the way to the end of this episode. So you might be interested in hearing from me about some of the ways you can support The Coach's Journey to help us support even more coaches to create thriving, authentic coaching businesses that help them support even more people in the world. So you might be interested in becoming a supporter of the show. You can do that at patreon.com/thecoachesjourney. There's links in the show notes wherever you're listening. And that's where you pay a certain amount of money every month in exchange for finding out who the guests will be in advance, asking questions of guests, and getting various other updates and benefits, including at some levels, a discount on the Coaching Business Flywheel Booster Pack, which is an amazing digital product that I'm really proud of creating. You might also be interested in becoming a member of the Coach's Journey community. Alex has been a huge proponent of that and supporter of the community, because he's got so much from being a member, and some of the other, all the other members of the host team have been members at different times. Some still are. And what that means is you're a member of a flexible, affordable group coaching program. You can pay as little as £20 a month or as much as £100 a month. And depending on how much you pay, you get to come to a different number of group coaching calls each year, be coached by me, and be connected to some other amazing coaches who are also on the journey. You get some one-to-one time too with me if you're a full member. And as a full member, you get free access to the Coaching Business Flywheel Booster Pack. And you also get a whole host of other benefits. And if none of those feel right now, but you still want to support the show, please consider sharing it with some other coaches who you think might value it, leaving a review or a rating on your podcast platform, especially Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and click follow so that you hear about the next episode right away when it comes out. We've got exciting plans for the rest of the year, and thank you so much for any support you give us. And a particularly a big thank you to Alex Whitten, David Norris, Jessica Jem, Joey Owen, Ruth Saville, Annette Corbett, Jeff Poulton, James Bradbury, and Emily Edwards for your ongoing support. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope to have you back with us on the Coach's Journey podcast sometime soon.